I don't need to carry an intro. I am the intro. Oh, man. There's your audio, folks. Now just put that and then like a blurry JPEG of me and Danny in front of a green screen. And like our headshots just like spinning around and exploding out of buildings, out of windows, and like maybe saving a cat or something, saving the day, stopping the evil plots, and I think we got a sequel here, Denny. I don't mean to like break any copyright laws that are outlined on the top of the disc of the movie we're covering today, but I think we got something here.
Well, this movie does have a sequel, and it's unwatchable, so we might as well just make our own.
That's right. Folks, the movies for when Royal Rumble, director Royal Rumble, unfortunately does have to come to a close, but not before the final entrance makes his way into the ring, the surprise entrant, Denny. Set the scene. I set the movie scene, set the intro scene for our next director entering the ring. Or should I say, entering the ring.
You see our directors currently in the ring. Quentin Tarantino, the Coen brothers, and John Carpenter duking it out as the last buzzer starts to count down. 10, 9, 8, 7. And then it crackles and you see just pixelated images. It's almost as though someone has hacked into the Royal Rumble.
Uh-oh.
Could it be? It is! There's a bright spotlight in a room that is dark, surrounded by a cavalcade of laptop backup dancers and spilling coffee all over the crowd. It is Neil motherfucking Breen, the GOAT, ladies and gentlemen. Neil Breen with Twisted Pair, the final surprise entrant in the director Royal Rumble.
I'm in the ring now. So... Folks, I don't know. It's like we had to do this one. I'm not gonna lie. Welcome back to Movies for When. Movies for When?
Where
things get a little crazy.
Oh.
Holy shit. Neil Breen, ladies and gentlemen. This is such a surprise to me that I forgot we were covering him after we recorded the previous episode, and you had to remind me. But yeah, Neil Breen, the next big thing, I guess. If you are someone who's familiar with movie reviews on YouTube, you have likely seen clips or reviews or compilations of some sort of Neil Breen's films on YouTube. If you don't know who he is, seek those out. Because normally I save this for when we start talking about the movie, but our movie of the day is 2018's Twisted Pair, which you can find streaming nowhere. You can watch it on DVD. I'm holding up my disc now.
A lot of this stuff is on the Internet Archive now. Not that we would encourage
violation
of explicit copyrights on legally binding DVD covers.
The disc says, and I quote, "Do not copy. It is illegal to copy, download, upload, or use this film for commercial or non-commercial purposes. For private use only." And folks, if you want to purchase the movie, of course, you have to visit the website that's on the disc, www.twisted-pair-film.com. Make sense? Cool.
So, for the sequel to this movie, I actually had to buy it twice. Because...
Yeah.
I just moved, and right after I paid for it, I noticed I had it shipped to my old address, and I thought about contacting the seller, and I was like, the odds of Neil Breen answering my email, understanding how to change my shipping info, and actually following through and doing it is so low that I just immediately bought it again. I was just like, I have to just eat the cost of this. But I want to make sure that everyone knows where to figure out who this man is. Guys, Neil Breen is very serious Denny and Greg lore. Like, we have watched every one of this man's films. He is an insane person, and the reason we haven't really done him before is because, honestly, Fateful Findings is probably the peak Neil Breen movie, and Your Movie Sucks, as well as Red Letter Media, have done such amazing jobs covering that movie that we were just like, we're not going to touch it. You know, like, what could we do that hasn't been done in those reviews? But I'm really excited that we finally found a reason. That I don't think, because Twisted Pair is newer.
Yes.
So not as many people have like covered and reviewed it, and I actually have like a, because this was the first to come out once I knew who Neil Breen was.
Right.
This was the first that I got to watch like first run. You know.
Yeah. In like 2015 or 2016, it was the Your Movie Sucks review of Fateful Findings, and he also, you know, covered the first other two movies in that video. But I found that video and I said, Denny, you need to see this video immediately. And yeah, that was the start of everything. And then our first like new Neil Breen movie watch party was when we purchased Twisted Pair. I guess we're getting into relationships now. We're just all out of order. This is very on brand for what we're covering today, so it all makes sense. We got the DVD, we watched it as a group, had a hell of a time.
It was so much fun. I remember that.
We had
like 20 people gathered to watch. Like, when we say watched it as a group, we don't mean us and our partners. Like, we had a fucking screening for this thing.
Yeah, to the point where, like, the couches were full, any other seating was full, people were, like, pulling in the dining room table chairs into the living room to watch the movie also.
In the living room. I was in the kitchen, because I'd already seen it, so I didn't feel like I deserved priority seating, but I was, like, that far back. I was in the kitchen watching this movie. Like, we needed stadium seating for this, and we didn't have it.
I will issue a quick correction on us, because there was actually, it was the movie before this that we actually watched as a group, Pass Through. That was 2016. We watched Pass Through.
Oh, okay. I could have sworn it was.
That was the weird xenophobic one.
No, yeah, I know Pass Through. Pass Through is the one that, yeah, that really, that's my least favorite one to watch, other than Cade the Tortured Crossing. Either way, one of these times we had a big screening for these things,
Pass Through, we had the big screening, and yeah, then Twisted Pair in 2018. My apologies to the Neil Breen filmography.
Bro, for my money, so for those who don't know, I Am Here, ... now is a movie where he's like cyborg Jesus, and there's two others, Double Down and Pass Through. To me, they are only distinguishable by knowing that Pass Through is the racist one. Other than that,
yes.
Like, I cannot tell those two movies apart. Double Down and Pass Through are identical, pretty much.
Fucking fantastic. But yeah, you're right in saying that Fateful Findings is peak Breen cinema, for sure. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That, if you were going to watch one, that's the one.
Yeah, I'm going to shoot this damn podcast all full of holes, though, if we don't do things in order and do the proper gimmicks. So
wonderful, wonderful.
Denny, clearly we've watched a Neil Breen movie since last we spoke. Mm-hmm. For the podcast. But what else did you watch? Did you watch new things? Did you watch current events things? Did you watch old things? Did you watch horror things? It's October now. I assume you're starting to watch some spooky things.
Yes to everything you just said. I watched all of, like, literally everything you just said. There's something in the category.
Love it.
Let's see. I'll start with, just to touch base, I watched one of our first movies we covered, Clue, which is just a fantastic movie to watch. I highly recommend everyone do it. I watched a sequel to another movie we covered and rated very highly. I watched Airplane 2, the sequel. And it's very okay. They go to the moon in this one, so they're very much intentionally jumping the shark. It's not as good as the first one, but it does have boobs in it, and that's why I rented it a lot when I was a kid. I watched Society. That's a great Cronenberg-style anti-yuppie one. So one that we are going to cover one day. One of my favorite movies ever is The Warriors. Have you seen The Warriors, Greg?
I actually haven't.
That's going to get its own, like, new big city feel. Like, it's so fucking good. The Warriors is amazing. I want to save our thoughts for long form.
I have a gigantically long list of stuff I need to watch. I finally sat down and thought, like, what haven't I seen? What do I want to see? I'm constantly adding and sometimes subtracting. More on that later. What else did you watch?
I'm going through some of the highlights of stuff that doesn't really need to be talked about. Batman and Robin and Halloween. That's the Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze, Uma Thurman's Poison Ivy, Batman and Robin. Mm-hmm. I watched that and Halloween H2O on the super old CRT that you can see on our Instagram at Movies for When. They were really, really good watches on that.
We are worth following for that TV alone.
It's the coolest fucking thing ever, dude.
That's great.
If we ever do like a long form Halloween, I know it would probably be a minute before we got to H2O, but I actually really do like that one for something so late in the franchise. It's pretty decent.
I only remember it because like we were going to the movie theater a lot as a kid, and that was like the poster for that was up for like ages. That one in Jason.
I remember that too. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
I was like, well, these have to be the scariest movies of all time. And then
what I remember, everyone at my school, I didn't get to see Halloween H2O when I was a kid, but some people got to see it and everyone was talking about, there's a hockey skate kill in it that like made an impression on a lot of kids. Ooh. So yeah, there's a little something for Greg in that movie. If you want to go along for the ride,
there we go. I'll have to talk to Dylan about this, but yeah, I'm on board.
Hell yeah. I was just kind of into New York stuff. I watched Escape from New York, got me on that kick. I watched Rumble in the Bronx starring Jackie Chan. Very, very fun movie to watch. It's definitely like an action comedy. I grew up with my brother and I had two PG-13 movies, Big Daddy and Rush Hour 2, and we watched one of them every night for years. I swear, like every single night we watched one of them. And so I'm a big Jackie Chan fan dating back to his work in Rush Hour 2. It was years before I even saw Rush Hour 1, to be honest. But Rumble in the Bronx it's got all the Jackie Chan, none of the Chris Tucker. So that's nice after, you know, what we found out. I watched A Cinderella Story starring Hilary Duff and Stifler's mom and Chad Michael Murray. It's all right. It's not my favorite teeny bopper millennial thing, but it was all right.
I love Hilary Duff, though.
Yeah, I do too. But I always viewed her as a rival to Lindsay Lohan. So, you know, it was a real, you know.
Yeah, I was always a Lizzie McGuire kid, so.
Nice.
But also a Herbie Fully Loaded. No, never mind. No, I wasn't. Nobody was a Herbie Fully Loaded kid.
No, that's when it all died. Mm-hmm. That's when it all went south. That's when the party was over.
The spark was gone.
So to talk about something a little more substantial that I wanted to spend a little time, I felt like I needed a good cry to help me deal with some things. So I watched The Fox and the Hound, and boy did I cry. Holy shit.
I haven't seen that movie since I was real young, and I think the reason I haven't revisited it is because I remember it being so sad. So sad.
Yeah. I remember someone showing it to me when I was a kid, and I was legitimately like, why would you show me this? Why would you show me this movie? Why would you think I would want to do this? And so I seriously never watched it again till now. I think it has some really poignant things to say about life. I viewed it. It's a sad movie, but there's not like despair in the movie. There are moments of despair. But I think it really addresses some hard truths about the way we're socialized versus the way we would be naturally. The brutal nature of reality versus the hopeful world of a peaceful utopia. And it ultimately like is a movie about accepting that you need to move on in so many ways, no matter how hard it is, no matter how painful it is. Sometimes it's just time to go. And then there's and like the hopefulness of the movie that I don't think it gets talked about as much is that it's like, hey, there's a really beautiful life for you on the other side of these goodbyes. And you do have to part with something you love in order to have another thing you love. But Greg, this is the biggest thing. Copper is the Hound, right? Mm-hmm. Young Copper, voiced by Corey Feldman. Old Copper, voiced by Kurt Russell. What the fuck? Ooh. How does no one talk about this? Corey Feldman and Kurt Russell are the Hound in The Fox and the Hound. No one... I felt like they were prank credits when I saw them. Like, I was like, fucking what?
Who edited this to mess with me? Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Moving on, Vanessa and I are in a pretty big Pokemon phase. I've fallen off my Heart Gold save a little bit, but I'll be back up soon, guys. Don't worry.
Yes, please. Eagerly awaiting updates.
Hell yeah. I'm at a point where I just kind of need to grind before I take on the Elite Four, and it's just, I've been in a stressful place, you know? I just haven't been up to it, but...
Those grinds are my stress relief. I play games in a weird way, so let me borrow that. Like, yeah, level 100.
You can be the daycare. That's awesome.
Hell yeah.
But we've been watching the Pokemon anime, the Indigo League, and that's been really good. It's way better than I ever remember it. And also, when I was a kid, there was just like so much like sports practice and shit like that, that I never got to like sit down and watch it like continuously. Oh, yeah. You know, even like my friend and I on the way to football practice, me and Troy Stewart used to catch the beginning of the Pokemon episode and talk about what we were missing on the way to football practice.
That sucks.
God, I hate sports.
But you love anime.
No, I don't like sports or anime. Pokemon is the exception that proves the rule. Also, Sailor Moon.
I'll buy it.
So we made a mistake, Greg. In our fervor, we watched Detective Pikachu. Oh my God, it's an insufferable movie. I saw it in theaters in, I guess, 2019.
I was going to say, I thought you'd watched it before.
I had, and I remember liking it. I was apparently in a very different place in life. I hated this movie so very much. I hated Detective Pikachu. I never want to hear or see or think of Ryan Reynolds again as long as I fucking live.
Okay.
This is what blew my mind. What I didn't even remember is the lead. God, I don't even know his name. It's the lead from I Saw the TV Glow.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to bring that up next.
Completely blew my mind because I didn't remember Justice Smith, right? Yeah. Yeah. God, what a cool name. My realtor's named Justice Carlisle. I wonder if they're related.
Usually it's the first name, right?
Sure. Anyway, Jesus Christ, it's a bad movie. There's a little documentary on Netflix called The Elephant Whisperers. That's a fun little... It was like a 50-minute doc. I highly recommend. I love elephants.
And whispers.
True. I watched a Universal Monsters movie I'd never seen because it's a C-tier monster from the 50s. It's called This Island Earth, and the monster is the Metaluna Mutant. You ever heard of him? Of course you haven't.
Thank you for answering that correctly.
It's not very good. But anyway, here's the toy, and I had to watch it because I didn't want to be a poser when I bought this. It's a pretty cool toy, though. Like, look at this. That's going to be great in the display. You can't really see it, but...
I guess I got to see it in person. Fine. Man. I'll see it in person. That is a cool-looking alien. Yeah, damn.
Right? Yeah, it doesn't look so cool in the movie, though. The toy's amazing. What I will say about it is that it's a Technicolor movie, and what it was doing with color was very impressive for the time, and I'm sure that is really what the pull for audiences was, but at this point... You know, I've seen psychedelic colors. I kind of want a little more. God, there's so much shit. I'm going to do the 2025 movies last and the Paul Thomas Anderson movies last.
Okay. Ooh, yeah.
Careful. I watched Death Spa, not knowing that it actually is featured on Best of the Worst. So I need to watch that episode of Best of the Worst now.
Ooh, awesome.
Death Spa is awesome. If you have ever been, like... I grew up with my mom going to, like, nice yuppie gyms and me, like, being put in, like, the playpen areas and stuff like that. And it is such an 80s, 90s yuppie gym architecture thing. It's so cool. I needed a little more John Carpenter, so I watched The Fog. I saw that first at an Alamo Drafthouse, and there was this really fucking annoying table next to me. And I thought I didn't like the movie very much because I was so angry at them. But honestly, it's just not John Carpenter's best work. It's kind of cool, nice and atmospheric, a little bit too slow. I watched Out Cold. We've covered that.
Yes, we have. You revisited Out Cold. All right.
Yeah, I love Out Cold. When I was in middle school, Out Cold was my favorite movie, like all-time number one.
That's the time for it to be your favorite movie.
Hell yeah. I watched Bad Moon. That's a really interesting werewolf movie. It was really good until it was... I can't tell you how bad the transformation was and how much it ruined the movie. And it really shocked me because, like, the wolf puppet is, like, really amazing and actually kind of scary. But this is a fun... I think you would like it because it's a dog versus werewolf movie. The family dog knows that Uncle is turning into a werewolf. It's a big German Shepherd, so he stands a chance, which is tight.
Bad Moon, more like Bad Moon V. What else did you watch, Danny?
Getting into the 2025s and crossing over into the Paul Thomas Andersons from here. I saw a controversial movie, Him, in all caps. Do you have any knowledge of the movie Him? Do you have any thoughts? Cheers to you.
Seen a couple trailers. I've seen a lot of... Yours is the most positive opinion I've seen, and I've only seen your rating of it. I don't know what to make of it, really. I think I kind of know what it's about, but... Mm-hmm. I don't know. Before I saw your review, it didn't look like something that I was actually going to want to
seek out, really.
Yeah. I was like, this might be okay.
I was surprised how much in the trailers, I was always like, Jesus Christ, I don't want to see this movie. Wait a minute. because they would loop in the Jordan Peele production of it all. This is a Monkey Paw production. Him is a movie starring Tyreek Withers and Marlon fucking Wayans, ladies and gentlemen, giving a fucking career performance. Him is a very art house movie about Tyreek is the quarterback on the come up. Marlon Wayans is the current quarterback, and he goes to a 7-day training camp in the private facility of Marlon Wayans, it gets really art house. I think I saw a lot of people hate it, and I think it's because they felt like they were promised football horror, and I understand feeling disappointed in that.
That's probably why you were surprised you liked it so much.
Well, to me, I have always had a lot of really unpopular opinions about football, and I felt that the movie really addressed a lot of those issues that I've been seeing my whole life, and I felt that it addressed them in a really artistic, really, like, satisfying way. I think if people came to watch, like, a movie about a training camp with a scary QB, I'm like, yeah, this is a little too more, like, this is more, more Mandy than, I don't know, what's a stupid grounded horror movie that I would never watch? The Grabber, Black Phone.
Should have been called The Grabber. You're right.
I did watch The Black Phone. It sucked.
I have
an unpopular opinion on the movie Him in the sense that I really liked it. And I think that sometimes people should just go watch fucking Friday Night Lights. Moving on. If that's what you want, go watch it. I watched, hold on, I thought I saw another 2025. I guess I didn't. Okay, I guess it's just two then. That'll segue us to Paul Thomas Anderson. I'll say the ones I didn't like as much.
Okay, go ahead. I'm going to say, if the 2025 Paul Thomas Anderson movie, I'm going to need you to say as little as fucking possible.
Okay.
Because I haven't seen it, and I am actively trying to know as little as possible going into it.
So we'll not discuss it, and we'll probably do a little mini episode once we both see it, kind of like we did with Eddington. It can be our little what we've been watching segment together.
What a great movie.
The one thing I will say about it is that it is my favorite Paul Thomas Anderson movie other than There Will Be Blood.
Okay.
There Will Be Blood is a 50, One Battle After Another is a 49, and that doesn't spoil anything. That just tells you how much I fucking loved it.
That's what I want to hear.
One I didn't love as much was Inherent Vice.
Mm-hmm.
I really love neo-noir, and so, like, it was really working for me. I don't even need it to be, like, super grounded. Like, I like shit like Under the Silver Lake. I love noir movies. I've even asked if we can do a noir theme later this year. It's unconfirmed. We'll see how far I push Greg with Halloween.
Just don't four rooms me and we'll be fine.
No promises. I just felt that this was another kind of movie that went on about an hour too long, man. I was with it. I was feeling it. And ultimately, I just kind of lost interest by the third act. You know, like, it was a little too late to pay it all off. But I did like the movie. It's like a 3.5 star. But, you know, PTA, he can do better. And he did do better in Punch Drunk Love, the last movie. Oh, sorry, you had thoughts on Inherent Vice.
I think I talked about it a little bit within the last couple of years, because I watched it for the first time in the last couple of years. I enjoyed it, I think, more than most people did, or at least what I was seeing on the reviews and everything. Pretty good. I think it's probably like bottom two or three Paul Thomas Anderson movies, which still means it's at least like a B+ or something.
Sure, sure.
Like, I found myself enjoying it more as it started ending. I found it a little bit harder to get on board. So I think I have the inverse opinion with you. Yeah. I was like, okay, now that I'm on board, now that we're kind of wrapping things up, I'm way more buying into this thing.
So yeah, yeah.
I need to watch it again, I think, is the ultimate thing. But I think I'll probably come away with a similar opinion. But Punch Drunk Love, I also watched.
Oh, shit.
Right around the same time as I did Inherent Vice. And I really liked that one. That was a good-ass movie.
Me too, dude. I, you know, my roommates and I watched it in college, and we just, like, hated it and thought it was annoying. And I've always thought I probably wasn't in the right place to see it yet, or I didn't understand it yet, just because, like, so many people love it. And so this was my first watch since then. And, yeah, dude, this is a fucking great movie that I, like, love on a personal level. It furthers my opinion that Adam Sandler has the most protected punch in Hollywood, and that's why Paul Thomas Anderson cast him. Like, seriously, guys, I'm about to make a letterboxed list of movies where Adam Sandler punches someone in the face and gets the girl in the end. And I promise it's going to be a long list, okay? But there's only one you really need to see, and it's Billy Madison. But if you watch a second one, it's Punch Drunk Love.
That's right. Hell yeah.
So yeah, that's my talk without breathing. Trying to cram a lot of movies into not horribly long, I hope. But yeah, that's what I've been watching. I finished it off with a little Paul Thomas Anderson kick.
I appreciate that. Well, hey, mine's going to be a lot shorter, but it is also going to be very current events,
nice,
except for this first one, because I didn't go PTA, but I did go CB. A couple guys that are still in the ring, the Coen brothers. I did my once per calendar year rewatch of No Country for Old Men.
It happened!
Last night, I got the 4K Criterion Blu-ray disc.
Fucking yes.
It was my first time watching it on that 4K disc, and it is fucking crispy, delicious, fantastic. Ooh, and I was wearing headphones. I could hear every little crunch, crackle, light bulb unscrewing in the hallway, phone ringing a mile away. You name it, I heard it. I saw it. It was A+ dynamite. Perfect cinema. Perfectly made. Masterful editing. I gotta stop myself before I go for two more hours, because I gotta talk about all this other shit.
But man,
the rest of this list is all 2025 movies, and there's one that I'm going to omit to save for next episode because it will be more on theme. But that's a good one. From 2025, I watched The Thursday Murder Club on Netflix. It is a movie made by and exclusively for old British people. It is
a real Banshees of Inisherin vision.
Yeah, I hard disagree that.
No, I love that movie, but
there you
it's
go.
Just old British people, you know.
Entertaining enough little mystery movie with Helen Mirren and Pierce Brosnan and I forgot the other guy's name. I'll remember one day. Played Gandhi. In the movie Gandhi.
I always just envisioned that as the real Gandhi. I'm gonna be, I haven't watched it, but I guess I never really asked who played Gandhi.
You know, Ben Kingsley, please, please forgive me, Ben Kingsley. Mr. Ben Kingsley, he's also in, he's great, he's a fantastic actor, and an okay movie. It's a solid 5 out of 10. Will Reno's review is very funny, but you have to watch the movie first, unfortunately. Next in 2025, Denny mentioned a sequel to a good movie. We talked about Airplane 2. I watched a sequel to something in a similar vein. I watched The Naked Gun 2025.
Ooh!
It was really, really funny. It's good.
Okay,
it's
good. Okay, awesome, awesome.
It's on Paramount Plus. Watch it. It is gag a second comedy, some great visual jokes, hilarious performances. Doesn't fully rely on references to the first movie.
Awesome.
It is not just, you know, riffing off the first one. It is sticking with the strengths of the first movie and satirizing the tropes you see in, like, police dramas, which I know Denny doesn't watch police dramas. You know the tropes, though. You'll have
I've seen Maniac Cop. I love that series.
But, yeah, The Naked Gun's good. There's a joke. There's a reaction from Pamela Anderson to a line, and it's the hardest I have laughed at a movie in years. Once you watch it, I'll tell you which one, but maybe you
Sweet.
Can guess.
I just put it on my watch list.
Hell yeah. You're going to have a good time. Short, like 90 minutes. It's great.
Oh, shit. Just the way I like them.
What's better than that? I watched Warfare on HBO Max, the new movie co-directed by Alex Garland from Ex Machina that we've covered here before. I thought it was really good. I thought it was a very honest retelling of a real event. It's co-directed, and the other director is a soldier that was at the battle that is being portrayed in the movie. Zero glorification. It's not just, you know, rah-rah, hooray, military. It's very honest, fucking grounded, gritty story. It was, I don't know, it was good. It was really well, really, really, really well made, really well performed. I thought it was going to be like a very pro-military thing, which, you know, we've seen a ton of, but there was just like, there's a scene where like, so basically the movie is two squads are separated. They're like posted up in different houses. We're following squad A. Everyone's getting overrun by enemy soldiers. Squad, and people get hurt over here. This squad comes in to rescue squad two. A, they all join together, and the leader of squad A is like, tells the leader of squad B, like, you gotta take over, I'm too fucked up, which is like something you would never see in like a fictionalized retelling of a story like this. It was I don't know, it's just like a small moment of like brutal honesty, and I don't know, I really liked it.
Cool.
Just a small thing. Okay, two more. I watched A Working Man, starring Jason Statham.
Ooh.
And it was bonkers, but in a bad way. I watched The Beekeeper last year, which I think is from the same director, and that takes a bunch of zany turns in a fun way. A Working Man takes similar zany turns in a shitty way. If you read my Critica review, I basically allude to the fact that the third act is taken over and operated by Spirit Halloween. I don't know how else to explain what happens in this movie. It's
what?
It's weird. I'm walking up to Act 3 expecting my normal Act 3 goodness, and there's a banner hanging over the Act 3 sign that says Spirit Halloween. I'm like, what's happening here? And I walk in and I'm seeing some weird shit and not what I expected to see in a third act of a movie. I don't know. Not a good movie. I scored it like on my phone in the middle of the movie and I just dropped it like a few points every like 20 minutes or so. It stopped being fun Lastly, a movie I did enjoy quite a bit, Tim Robinson and Paul Rudd hitting it off, being friends.
In
a movie called Friendship.
This came up in the group chat.
It did. Really hit some of my exact humor points. I'm happy to say it was exactly what I was expecting, which is pretty good. I was expecting like a 7-ish out of 10, and that's exactly what I got. Paul Rudd fit with that brand of humor very, very well.
Yeah. And
Kate Mara was like the straight man kind of character, but like she was fantastic in the movie. And I don't know. It's just such an insane and absurd like sense of, there's just like an insane sense of reality. I don't know how you can watch this movie and think that these are human beings that you're watching.
No, it's just like, it's like this dim hyper reality, but it's not like fun and bright. It's this like very liminal kind of empty darkness that you're seeing. I don't know, man. I really felt like it was a hit. I do think it's a really unique movie that makes you feel a real unique certain way. It's pretty sweet. I can't believe that Paul Rudd could put this movie out the same year he put out The Death of a Unicorn and like just like show his face in public and prove that he like can actually do really good stuff when he puts his fucking working boots on, but he doesn't respect us enough to do that every movie. It drives me fucking nuts.
And you were very mid on Death of a Unicorn, which I didn't see.
I've had this like kind of like you were saying, every time I've returned to the thought of it, I've like liked it a little bit less and gone back and lowered my score. I've just been like, man, that started as like an inoffensive mid movie. And then I started asking, how did you take something so cool with such a great cast and turn it into something so forgettable in mid? And I just get more and more upset about it. But Friendship, dude, like I said, dude knows how to fucking pull out his Brian Fantana when he wants to.
Well, you're talking about a heavy-hitting cast, but ultimately forgettable movie. Folks, we're here to talk about the opposite of that. A fully unknown cast full of your local English teacher and attorneys and people found on Craigslist, I think.
Shot without permission on a community college campus at 3 a.m.
And an ultimately unforgettable film. Folks, it's Twisted Pair. Like I mentioned at the top, you can watch it on DVD, and you better believe that as soon as you throw that DVD into your DVD player, the movie starts playing before you can sit down on the couch.
You know it!
It's just going. You're like, oh, is this the menu? No, the movie's playing.
No clip, right into the movie.
You think he knows how to make options?
No. Like, we're honestly, I would think it was more Neil Breen if it was just like a default iMovie that had one option on it. Like,
play
movie. Man, this is a low-tech man that makes high-tech movies. Neil Breen, ladies and gentlemen.
High concept, yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
With the approach of a low concept mindset approach. Well, I'll start us off with the critiquer reviews of the week. I have two because I wasn't really finding anything on Critiquer, but I did find a couple of things on Letterboxd. And there were actually like the two most recent reviews. Both got like a really big laugh out of me, so I just like screamed. I just took them both down here. Keely17 gave this a 2.5 star review and said in all lowercase, "This one is a thinker." All right, next one. I love that one a lot. Sam Thunderfist gave this a half star review and said, "It's so heartening to know that even today, with the rampant scourge of AI on the rise, we have a director like Breen willing to tackle the real issues like programmable virtual reality." Just concepts of technology. Let me go really quick to the IMDb page for Twisted Pair because I need to give a plot synopsis, and it's just going to be incoherent if I try to do it from memory. So
that's a task.
Summarizing this movie is an impossible task. Identical twin brothers become hybrid AI parentheses artificial intelligence entities, yet are torn in different directions to achieve justice for humanity. What does that mean, you ask? Well, the movie's here to also not really tell you. Stuff happens. Points are made. Things are addressed. Concepts are brought up. Things happen. Some of it explained. Overexplained. Some of it not explained. Some of it
explained five times using the same take for
repeatedly in a row.
Some of it explained while holding scripts on camera.
This is a hell of a feature, folks. We already kind of discussed our relationship with the movie, so we can just kind of dive right in.
I actually had something I wanted to add. I actually had a really special relationship with this one, and I think it'll help set the tone for our conversation today. So this is the only Neil Breen movie I ever got to see in theaters. It was my birthday gift to myself. I don't remember if it was actually on my birthday, but like I was driving for Uber to support my counseling habit at this time, and I did not cancel sessions, but I canceled a couple sessions so I could drive to the Alamo in Richardson. That was the only place that was showing it. As soon as it was announced, the tickets were like, I was in the front row in a seat by myself. Like it was so filled up, packed house. And I go there and I'm a little self-conscious about feeling older and being there alone. And I'm like sitting next to a bunch of high schoolers and I'm afraid they're going to be like, who's this like weirdo? But they were immediately just like, everyone there is like super nice. And everyone is like talking about like, it's just like such a like cool environment. We all are like at church together, so to speak. And there's this like, there's this podium just sitting there and we're like, oh my God, like, do you think he's here? Like everyone was wondering if Neil Breen was about to like walk out and introduce the movie. It ended up just being the Alamo events coordinator, but he shared with us some really cool perspectives. One of them is kind of serious. One of them is really funny. One is that he was like, hey, we're here to like have a good time and have fun, but we are not here to heckle this movie. And he was like, and here's why. He was like, someone handed me physical DVDs to this movie years ago, or to Neil Breen years ago, or someone handed me physical Neil Breen DVDs a couple years ago. And it was just this crazy, like, you can only get these things through like physical media. Now they're a little easier to find online, but there was a time where you really had to have these physical DVDs. It was really hard to watch the movies if you didn't have them. And he basically was like, this is probably the last time there will be a director like this. Like one that like distributes their movies and is like an actual crazy person. And it's not like ironic. Like it really is like a Tommy Wiseau in the room, you know? And it was just him. It was the guy saying like, hey, like, let's laugh, let's have fun, but also let's be grateful that this is kind of the last of a dying breed. You know, like, we probably won't have, like, media passed by hand from an insane person directly to our movie screens. So I always liked that mentality. I feel like there's something to revere about, like, Neil Breen just being a legitimate insane person who makes movies, and we should celebrate that.
You mentioned The Room. It's Neil Breen isn't going to retcon the intent behind his films.
Yeah. Right. I mean, some of his films have multiple meanings, though. The other thing that he said, this is the funniest fucking thing. I can't believe he did this. So the guy read us an email from Neil Breen. He basically was like, hey, we're really excited about Twisted Pair. Thanks for working with us. I'd really love to do a Neil Breen film fest with you present. Is that something you might be interested in? And Neil Breen responded, a Breen fest with me there would be very expensive for you. Stick with Twisted Pair. He fucking big leaked him. He was like, you can't afford it, honey. Oh my God.
Name your price. And Neil's like, $1,000. It's like, dude, what? We were thinking five. Let's do one. I'll give you two.
Man, I just couldn't believe. I mean, like, literally, it's either because he's legitimately insane or because he, like, didn't want to come to Texas. One of those two things. But, like, bro, I can't imagine if someone, like, wanted to do, like, a whole festival of my shitty little movies I've made. I can't imagine saying no. But anyway, that's my relationship with this movie. I seeing it in a theater of, like, people who were, like, rabid Neil Breen fans and just everyone was having a good time. Like, it's seriously a memory I'll cherish forever. That was, like, a really, really, really special moment in my life. And the whole time, we kept being like, is he getting self-aware? Like, no. No, he's not. He's not trying to be funny on purpose. Nope.
That's one of those things. It's like one of the things I kind of wanted to talk to you a little bit about. It's just like...
Sure.
The intent is baffling.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's just like... Yeah, it at a certain point, like here, like sitting in an audience and everyone having the same response of like, holy shit, this is insane. It's like at a certain point, the thought crosses everybody's mind that this has to be a little bit intentional.
Right.
But when you really think about it, it's like nobody could do this intentionally. No one could make something like this with any shred of self-awareness. He is just blindly throwing his creativity onto a green screen and just
yes
burning it onto DVD discs to sell on websites.
Well, I think what people need to understand about like the narcissistic insanity of this person is that, like, first of all, in every movie he's like the moral hero. Like, he's just like so good and everyone loves him and he just is telling everyone how to live. But when he usually writes to address some sort of issue with like corruption in society or something like that, he's very, very preoccupied with these things. But the way he writes about them implies to me that he doesn't understand how they work. Like he'll be like,
yeah,
banks, you're corrupt. And there's like literally points where he's like, you know what you did. I'm not going to say it, but you know, you're corrupt. And it's like, if you asked him to be like, so how are the banks corrupt? Like, how do banks harm people with their corruption? I guarantee he, like, doesn't know. Like, he just will be like, all you politicians, money. You're bad. You've done bad things. And they're just, anyway. Those are reviews for other movies, but I'm like, to understand that this isn't ironic, you need to, like, spend enough time like we have getting into this man's headspace and seeing, like, how he views the world and seeing that it's, like, it's very clearly from a very simple perspective. And yet he's rumored to be like, I believe he's either a real estate agent or an architect in like the Las Vegas area, right? Yeah. One of those two things. We don't know for sure.
I think architect. And yeah, one of my notes was actually on his stance on morals, just generally morals. And it is covered in this movie a little bit. You know, he's got those, like, Cade, what's his twin brother's name? Who cares?
Kale,
excuse me. Kale's got those guys chained up, and they are...
That's a memorable scene.
Well, yeah, because it happens, like, four times, but...
Yeah.
their crimes against humanity are giving money to politicians, being corrupt. It's just like... It's like that scene in Community where Britta and Annie are protesting the Gulf oil spill, and...
No one's on the other side of this issue.
Exactly. You don't have to yell at us.
No one here is pro-corruption. That's not how it works. They find other ways to call it what... Like, that you... Sorry, my cat's climbing on my toy collection. You don't just be like, all right, guys, time to go be corrupt. Like, it's like, no one's pro-corruption. They think of different ways to describe their selfish moral... Or their selfish motives, right? And yeah, dude... Neil Breen is out here just a man with like a hand cannon and a green screen, so to speak.
Yeah. It's like I have never personally bribed a politician. That must mean I'm good.
True.
I like, it's It's just such a weird stance on morals, portrayal of morality and moral superiority, that it's coming from such an uninformed place, like you were saying. It's just like, it's so incredible to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
I'm making it sound like I'm talking down to the movie, but it's just like, damn, some people think like this.
Right.
This is insane.
I mean, I might say one person thinks like this. I don't know that some people think like this, but like...
Well, not exactly like this, but, you know.
But I think what's so special about Twisted Pair here is that I have the sequel, Cade the Tortured Crossing, and it's shot clearly not just on a green screen, but in, like, a green screen set where there's, like, there's green furniture pieces and things they're interacting with. But it's, we could never review it. It's unwatchable. It's definitely not reviewable because, like, and I think it seems like he's getting older and he's having some, probably he's not as mobile as he used to be, and it might be harder to get around.
So he wasn't jumping on those balconies, is what you're telling me?
Well, you know, there are some really, really convincing special effects. He did do his own stunts in MS Paint. the second one, I swear to God, Greg, every shot is just a wide shot on this studio space that they've clearly rented. And there's like four or five people in it, and they're going on about God knows what. It's all boring fucking dialogue. There's really not like the laughs you would typically expect. And that's why I really love Twisted Pair, because it's not his best one, but I think it is probably the last of its kind. He did announce, actually, topically, last week, Neil Breen announced he has begun work on his...
No, he finished.
He finished a new film. He finished a new film. Holy shit. Maybe we'll be the first to review it, Greg. Maybe we'll get our advanced copies.
It's in the can, which means that it's on a flash drive in a Folgers can somewhere in his house.
I think it's actually a 3.5 floppy disk from back in the day.
Yeah, this will not get a Blu-ray release. It will be on DVD once again.
There is a Blu-ray release of Fateful Findings that was sold through Amazon. There was someone on the Neil Breen subreddit trying to sell it for $1,000 recently, and
fuck off.
There was dispute in the comments if that's the actual value, but I do
isn't
think...
Isn't that corrupt? Sorry.
The poster just, you know, immediately shot themselves when accused of being corrupt, so...
Mm.
But yeah, he does have a Blu-ray release, and apparently it's, like, official, and I'm sure I would pay $1,000 for it, but I don't know if, you know, well-adjusted humans would.
Well, you know, the Breen fee, you know. You gotta pony up for the Breen. Pony up those Breen backs.
I need our audience to, like, know what this man looks like when we're talking about him big-leaguing people. I'm like, he looks like... there's one video that says he either looks like shit for 30 or amazing for 70.
He's one of the two. He's not in between.
No, there's no way this is like a 55-year-old man. Like, he's like, oh my god, dude. Like, he seriously reminds me of my grandma in appearance at different stages of her life. Like, he really looks a lot like my grandma, and he's casting himself as this fucking sci-fi action hero, and he's wearing goddamn dad jeans with a fucking... Here, I wrote this down, Greg. Psychological profile this type, okay? I'm always fucking conceptualizing. So give me a psychological profile of a type of person. Walmart jeans, no belt, tucked in shirt, dry skin, only uses bar soap. You know that's a fucking type of sociopath.
Oh, shit. Oh, fantastic.
Like, dude, you could wear anything to be an action hero. Like it's one thing that, like, obviously he's, like, a deluded person with, like, some grandiosity issues, and that's why he cast himself in these ways. But, like, I know you've seen a sci-fi movie, and I know you know they don't wear jeans. Like, you can, like... It frustrates me how little effort he puts into some aspects of this.
I was going to say, like, he doesn't have time to dress a set. What makes you think he has time to dress himself?
Hey, like, there it is.
It's... We could spend an hour on the filmmaking, but I think that's the biggest thing. That was the biggest shock watching this thing. It was just like, oh, shit. Like, the first chunk of the movie, we're like, oh, my God, is this all going to be on, like, a green screen? He's, like, interacting with, like, stock footage by, like, green screening himself into it. Is, like,
fucking tiger.
Is this going to be his new thing? Is that just, like, his new creative direction? And the first time we get a scene at the community college, we're like, holy shit, we're actually outside. Usually we're in a house, the same house, different rooms of the same house for his other movies. And then the previous movie that we talked about, we're in the desert. And now we're at a community college, and it's just like, it's like, again, you could say a million things about the filmmaking here, but it's just so insane to have, like, you're introducing the movie as, like, the world is my oyster. I can show anything I want by putting myself into any image or video, existing video that I want. I can fill in those gaps. I can be imaginative and show myself petting an eagle. Show myself in, like, a luxury private jet.
Right.
And then the other scenes are asking the audience to fill in all of those gaps because we're in, like, the hallway of a community college and it's, like, a top secret, like, meeting
also,
room.
Like, it's... no fucking... They're clearly using the camera audio. There's, like, echoes everywhere. It's, like, impossible to fucking hear what they're saying. Like, it's, like, literally the type of shit I made when, like, I found out in fourth grade you could, like, make a video in lieu of a book report. So I would just, like, fuck around and make something insanely stupid and impossible to follow and bring it to school. That's right. What this is like.
Exactly. But it's just, like, it's these two battling, like... creative directions of, like, I can do anything and show anything, and audience, you're gonna really have to put your thinking cap on about what I'm trying to do here. Like, this is a street. I know it's like a sidewalk at a community college, but this is a busy street with a homeless man feeding a rubber rat. Like, you're being asked to fill in gaps that he was going out of his way to fill, like, just a moment ago. It's going back and forth. It's such an insane way to, like, express anything about what's going on.
I guess you could say those two creative drives are a real twisted pair.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, cheers. Like, dude, I was thinking of that homeless person scene the whole time where it's like, there's multiple scenes of people interacting with a beggar, who, like, honestly just kind of looks like me when I go to, like, East Side or some shit. But, like, he's sitting in this this pristine and completely empty, like, you got to understand, guys, this is like a new community college. This place looks like it was built like 2 years ago. Like, it's all modern architecture, very, like, no wear and tear on any of the shit. Like, basically a factory sealed college campus, essentially.
LED bulbs bright as fuck everywhere, inside and outside.
Ugly imagery for filming. And so then you have, like, seriously, and I get, like, you can't, it's really hard to go shoot on the side of the road because the audio is impossible, right? Like, that's like, I'm sure he tried, but, like, to put this person in the middle of, like, dude, it's like, you can tell when you're out at night. You can tell if it's dark because it's 9 p.m. or if it's because it's 3 a.m. There's just a different kind of, like, stillness and silence at 3 a.m. And for what it's worth, that's actually when most movies are shot. Like, so much is done overnight, more than people would really believe, which just sounds like a fucking nightmare to me. But all that goes to say, it is this guy with nothing around him in the stillness of the world. It is literally... why would this one person who is down on his luck, of all the places he could possibly go, just sit down in the middle of nowhere where there is no fucking foot traffic except Neil Breen will, like, walk by and, like, accost a woman and take her on a date in a really weird way. But it's like, they didn't even put, like, Like, they could have put, like, some cardboard boxes or some crumpled up newspapers or shit to just make it look like a shittier area. And he just seems like a dude that's just kind of chilling there and doesn't dress that nice. But look at the fucking hero. You want to talk about not dressing that nice? Like, this dude probably looks better than the protagonist, to be honest with you.
He borrowed some of his clothes. But yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about. It's just like, you're supposed to just believe, or like, the intent is you're supposed to just see that as like a city street.
Mm-hmm.
That's the vision, is that like, this is a guy on the street, but it's like at an elevated level above like a common area, like a courtyard kind of area, mm-hmm. in a community college. But it's just like, he's leaning against a handrail. You're supposed to see that as like a sidewalk on a street somewhere, and he's like, mm-hmm. bumping into a woman on like a busy sidewalk, but there's only the three people right here. So like, those are the gaps that I'm talking about, him expecting the audience to fill right after showing him wearing like a surgical mask and looking at like a stock footage of another doctor pulling up a hologram of a DNA strand.
Guys, oh my god, that's
they're just at war with the creative visions in his own head are at war with each other, and he's putting them both on the screen like one after the other.
Well, I mean, like, I think he probably just couldn't fucking afford the, like, fucking stock photography pack for a whole 90-minute movie, so he eventually did have to shoot some things, unfortunately. And I think that, like another theme of this movie that seriously makes me think, like, he probably got this stuff in bulk in a package is, like, you know, it had to come up at some point. The famous "I have never had a beard" discussion. For the keen-eyed, the easiest way to tell Kale and Cade apart in this movie is that one of them has a beard, but I do not, for the life of me, know which one is bearded, because why would that matter? But all that goes to say, he famously is, like, clearing up a miscommunication and screaming, "I've never had a beard! I never had a beard in my life!" And, like, but then, if you notice, if you look in the rest of the movie, there's a couple people with fake mustaches for no real reason. And they're, like, very odd. They look like the fucking mustache that Andy Samberg puts on in Hot Rod. Like, that's how fake they look. And to me, it's just so abundantly clear that whatever beard kit he bought also came with a few sample mustaches, and he was just not going to let them go to waste and just put them on random fucking extras. They have these, like, they're very distracting because they're very bad mustaches that you can, like, see, like, a big piece of tape on them, essentially, you know, like, and it's just, like, dude just didn't want to, he didn't want to throw them away. So he just had some extras fucking wear their shitty mustaches.
It looks like the glue is also on top of it. It's hard to explain. You folks, you really got to see it for yourself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You can borrow my DVD. I promise. Boot up your old DVD player, your old Xbox 360, and watch yourself a movie.
Get a CD-ROM on Windows 95, and you can play through the Neil Breen Twisted Pair game. Dude, like, seriously, so we talked about one trope of Neil Breen movies, which is hilarious-looking medical procedures. There's a lot of medicine going on in his films. Another trope, which this movie I do feel improves upon, thankfully, another trope is that most of the women in his movies look very scared and aren't allowed to wear bras and seem like they're being possibly sex trafficked through Las Vegas. And Neil Breen clearly writes himself into some scenes so he can touch a woman. In this movie, he has a really, really, oh my God, awful and creepy and very, very rapey Mr. and Mrs. Smith tribute scene.
Yeah.
I will say the women looked less afraid in this movie. That was much more comforting, because, like, seriously, like, I don't think that Neil Breen is, like, you know, I don't know. I'm about to say I don't think he has a dungeon of sex trafficked people, but who am I to say something like that? The women look very uncomfortable in most of his movies, and it's just not an easy thing to watch. You know, like, it's just not a comfortable thing to sit through.
There was a video posted by the woman that played like his partner, his love interest in this movie, and she talked about how great he was, how great a time she had filming the movie and all that.
Okay.
She's like, the video is just like her on her phone, like laying in bed, just like talking about like, thank you guys so much for watching it. Hope more people can check it out. Unclear if she's being held at gunpoint while recording this video, but if we take it, you know, at face value, she does make it clear that it was a good experience filming this movie. Yeah. And she definitely, like you said, seemed the most comfortable filming this movie, which, okay, yeah. Good for you, girl. I'm glad it worked for you in a positive way.
First of all, I'm glad to hear that, and I honestly think I would feel very different about these movies if I found out that Neil Breen was like a real handsy creep with people. You know, like, I don't know that I'd feel the same. And so this is what I think really sets him apart, right? So there's a local filmmaker that I'm not going to name because, oh my God, I would never want to fucking put this guy out there. He has some wildly titled horror movies he's made, and he goes around and donates them to Recycled Books and Movie Trading Co., even though nobody wants them. And he shoots... His movies are all called... I'm going to make up a title, but they're all called, like, stupid shit, like The Devil's Gooch, or, like, The Boogers of Satan on the Midnight Hell, or some shit like that. And I hate his movies... And I hate him, and I hate that he has access to women. One time I stopped someone from going to one of his film shoots. I was like, do not put your face on this. You're making a big mistake. And so he is someone who is like, he very much has the same Neil Breen, like, kind of narcissism. He always cast himself as like the really, really smart, philosophically musing person. I hate him. I fucking hate him. Mm. I hope that people smash his equipment, and I hope it hurts, because he should never be allowed to ever do anything, because he sucks. And here's the difference, Greg. Here's the fucking difference.
I wanted to ask, how do you differentiate that mindset? What makes Breen stand out as similar sort of narcissistic mindset, casting himself in similar roles? What sets Breen apart?
Neil Breen has a respect for filmmaking, and it is unironic. His own way. In his own way, right? I didn't say he's necessarily good at conveying that respect, but I think if you always, in his credits, he almost always thanks, like, sci-fi authors and filmmakers who have inspired him, and he really is very personally fascinated by, like, green screen technology and things that could move the genre forward, and what a great discussion that would be for 1978 for him to have about how these things might be moving the genre forward.
A lot of his social media posts, he does talk a lot about, like, specifically with his movies, and this plays into the narcissistic side of it, but he is all about, like this is a gigantic win for independent cinema, independent filmmakers, indie filmmakers, right. People just doing it on their own. He seems to be, like, really kind of relishing in this, like, standing up for the little man, just trying to put their creative vision out there for people. He's a huge fan of that.
Yeah, and I think, like, and also he's released, like, I think we watched this. I don't remember if we did or not. He released this, like, 7-hour cut of him talking about his movies, and it's really not very funny or interesting or entertaining, but it's him in depth, like, telling you about, like, meaningful experiences making these movies. It's not a joke to him. He's very clear that, like, these are not midnight movies. This is not something he's making ironically. It's something he takes seriously. And hearing that, like, he conducts himself as a professional, at least from one story, that doesn't mean he always did, but we have one story of that, you know? Hearing that and people say the same things about Tommy Wiseau, like, even in those, like, weird sex scenes, people are, the woman who was in the film is like, oh, I was never uncomfortable. It was nothing but respect, like, the whole time. And nobody thought that, right? And all that goes to say, it's like, I feel like the other filmmaker I was talking about, I think his movies put evil into the world. I really do. Like, I don't like watching them. I watched one of the ones I bought and never touched anything again. I don't like the way I feel when I watch it. I don't like the way I think the people in the movies feel. I wish I wasn't seeing this person's vision. And Neil Breen, I feel like, is putting something positive in the world by what he does. Even if he is, like, an insane person who is, like, definitely a deluded narcissist and definitely nowhere near reality, he is a love of the game fucking filmmaker. Like, he is out there. Like, seriously, I didn't think he'd make another one after the last one, because it's just, it's very clear he can't get around like he used to. Why would he? He's getting older and older. And he still made another fucking movie, dude. And I'm sure that for all that green screen stuff that we laugh at, I think he's very fascinated with what he's doing. And I think it's a very artistically satisfying thing for him to do. And I think he, again, like I said, I don't think he sees the world like many people do. I think he has a lot of fucked up things about himself and the way he sees the world. Don't hear me just, like, glazing him, you know? But, like,
right.
Ultimately, like I said, I think he wants to make movies, and I think he wants people to care about movies. And I think this other filmmaker and people like him, I think he just wants to metaphorically and sometimes literally masturbate in front of a captive audience. You know, like, that's how, yeah, I feel about a lot of people who are making shit like Werewolf Cop from Hell, and you hear that and you're like, oh, is that like from 1978? And then you're like, oh wait, that's a 2018 movie, that's gonna fucking suck, because yeah, it's, the joy's gone. Joyfulness, Greg, it's joyfulness. How could I have taken so long to work myself to that word on this podcast?
We surmised this ourselves at least 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. The difference between, like, bad on purpose and, like, bad with good intentions and in a fun kind of way is joyfulness. And, you know, you talk about Tommy Wiseau and with Neil, you know, like, Neil Breen ending this movie and one of his other movies by saying, pointing at his heart, saying, I'll be right here. Like, oh, yeah, E.T. He's trying to evoke the thing he saw that he liked. And Tommy Wiseau, right, with the, you're tearing me apart. He's trying to do, right, Rebel Without a Cause in, right, that scene. He, like, we're just, these guys are just trying to evoke the thing in movies that they like that they think people also think is good.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just trying to recreate that and kind of put their own name on it. Just with a complete lack of nuance or any sense of, like, ability to bring your own take into it and that sort, mm-hmm, of thing. Mm-hmm. But the intent is seemingly joyful. They enjoy making movies. They want to make movies that people will like, and however misguided the technique and process they use to go about accomplishing that goal, like, however that goes, whatever, at least, like, their heart is in the mindset of, let's make a movie for people to enjoy, something that I like, draw inspiration, whatever. And then kind of what you're talking about is just, like, the joy is lost if they're, I don't know if it's just, like, a difference of self-awareness or just, like, if they're not using movies to treat people this way, they're going to use something else to treat people this way. I don't know.
Right.
I hate what you're talking about insofar as, like, I'm on your side, and it's just, like, I know people are like this, and it's just the joylessness of cheap cash grabs from, yeah, people that think like that, that are just going to use this opportunity to put themselves into a position of power to take advantage, yeah, of women or situations where they can, you know, interact with women. It's just, it's nasty. It's awful. I just don't really get that sense here. And there is, you know, some positivity in that, but,
well, I mean,
you're,
like,
comparing bad apples to worse apples, I guess. It's weird.
Well, I you know, and this is such a, like, you could laugh at how I'm applying this concept to these particular filmmakers here, but I'm going to stand by it as a sincere thing. I think there are people who create because they want to be artists, and I think there are people who create because they feel like they have to. And I think that Neil Breen creates like someone who feels like they simply must. Like, they just can't not do it is kind of what I get from that. Whereas other bad on purpose people, I'm like, oh, you wanted to be like a cult filmmaker. You tried to do it. You set out on an adventure to try to be John Carpenter, but guess fucking what?
There's just no sincerity behind it.
Right, right. And I just think that, like, I mean, like, dude, Neil Breen, in ways that, like, in some ways are warranted because, like, ultimately you put your art out there and people are allowed to react to it. But in some ways that I'm sure are really soul-crushing, Neil Breen has gone and just gotten fucking laughed at screenings. You know, like, just gotten, like, roasted to his face. No one is taking him seriously. And it just kind of doesn't faze him. Like, he just kind of seems to love that, like, people are watching his movie and he's here talking about it with them. And he doesn't even really seem to care that much that, like, he's the butt of a joke. It honestly seems to, like, it seems like he thinks they don't get the joke. Honestly, I don't think he feels humiliated. I think he's like, yeah, they don't hear the music. But
yeah, yeah.
I don't know, man. I love to join, as long as it's a benign and harmless person. I don't mind going into a crazy person's fantasy world with them. I actually think that, like, it's a really cool perspective, as long as we, you know, let's just not address immigration anymore in your work, Mr. Breen.
That's right. Yeah, goddamn. Yeah, unfortunately, I think I do have to call us. I have to play the gimmick music.
I think I was winding down naturally, man. I think I will say, too, like, seriously, you think of this movie and you're like, oh, we'd have so much to cover. But really, it's like, no, you guys need to go watch this movie and laugh. You know, like, that's that's really is like the joy of it is watching it and watching the absurdity and laughing and feeling levity. Us covering it, like, seriously, like, we don't have, like, the clips to pull in like YMS does or things like that. And I can't recommend, if this has piqued your interest at all today and you have never seen a Neil Breen film, start with Fateful Findings. If you need help accessing this movie, DM me on at Movies for Win on Instagram and I will get it for you. I would love to spread this dude's work. But I also think that it's like, there's a reason why it's probably not our longest discussion, even though we like it a lot and it's really funny. It's like, yeah, it can be funny on its own.
There's so little to talk about because if you haven't seen it, you're not truly going to get it. And if you have seen it, you already get it enough. And, like, I guess that's the kind of, what am I saying? Like, we're putting a barrier on ourselves by having a podcast, basically. Like, only doing this audio form is just, like, limiting us. Like, if we can't show you, it's really hard to explain.
Right, right.
And if you've already seen it, then you don't need us to tell you. But we do have our own takes on it. I like what we had to say. It's just watch it.
Yeah. Like
The whole, like, thesis of everything we're talking about is just watch the movie. And bring a few friends and whatever you use to inebriate your brain just a little bit. But not too much. Be responsible, folks. Use that and have a great time. Get ready to laugh. Again, start with the Fateful Findings, and Twisted Pair is a good time also. Yeah, are we ready to get into gimmicks, Denny? What say
you? I sure am. What's your where do we start? We're gonna go with favorite line.
Yeah, we can do favorite lines. I like that.
Cool. What's yours?
There's so many to choose from. There's so many iconic ones. Who am I? What am I? But I just went with every time. It's said like five times and it's the same take and it's just played over and over again in the same scene. Bitch. Oh my god, it's just fantastic. The way he says it, the way it's used in the scene, it's just,
yeah.
It's so funny. Hearing this guy swear is so fucking funny. I don't know. But, like,
it's like hearing a teacher cuss at school.
Yeah. Like, Hearing a teacher say fuck at school would be insane.
Mm-hmm.
Hearing a teacher, like, reading a book, like, in your English class, and, like, someone describes the dog as, like an old book where someone refers to a female dog as a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
That's what him saying bitch feels like, is your English teacher reading a book where that is in reference to a female dog.
Mm-hmm.
That's his delivery of the word bitch. Thank you for helping me get there. Fantastic. Oh my god, I love it. It's it's baffling. It's just one of many things that make him so unique, so unreadable, and yet so, like, I've seen this before.
it's clearly... This movie very much had a tone of him trying to show some edge, and I think that's a really good example of him trying to make an edgier, more adult-oriented film.
Yeah. This one's for grown-ups.
Mm-hmm.
This one's a thinker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What about you? What's your favorite line?
Well, we've honestly already said most of the ones I wrote down, so I don't know what I'm going to choose. I mean, obligatory, I never had a beard is, like, the favorite line from this movie, so I felt like I had to choose something else. One we haven't mentioned is, I don't give a shit, this is my form of justice, which is fucking awesome.
I like that.
I might go with that. We opened with I am the weapon and all the lines around that, and I will say... If he were a visionary, instead of I'll be right here, he would have said, I am here now. That's what he should have fucking done to close the movie.
Just with an extra half a second pause. because, yeah, IMDb calls it I am here dot 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 now. But the poster is I am here dot 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 now.
Easiest way to tell a casual, to spot a casual, is three dots and I am here now. It is a four dot movie. Like, oh my god. It's like the it's like the Inglorious Bastards, the German three versus a true Breen fan would have done four periods. It's an ellipsis and the end of a sentence.
That's a Breen ellipsis.
A neolipsis.
A neolipsis.
What's your diesel spot? This is our final diesel spot. When the main eventer comes and just whoops everyone's ass. There's a lot of ways to interpret it.
My diesel spot for Twisted Pair is, of course, Twisted Pair, a movie that, based on the title, surprisingly, is not about testicular torsion. my diesel spot is, of course, the inclusion of himself into stock footage of soldiers, like, moving from room to room in an abandoned building, and he's just adding explosions, and then he's putting himself in front, like, I'm actually leading the troops. I'm guiding them to safety.
Oh my god.
Follow
and he, like, freezes them again, like...
Oh my god, it's so fantastic. Like, I wanted... Like, I was torn between that one and the one where he's on the private jet, and, like...
God.
I thought it was just a still image of, like, a private jet, and then, like, a woman comes out from, like, the cockpit area and, like, poses by the door and then, like, walks down the aisle, and he's like, she's here to see me. It's just like, what the fuck is going on? But I went with the troops one because it's so funny. It's... Oh my god, it's so great. He is the weapon, Denny. He is the weapon.
When you look at him, you just think, fucking action hero, you know? Everyone Google Neil Breen and say fucking action hero while you're looking at him.
Where's the hell out of those Neil jeans?
my diesel spot is when he copy and pasted his jobbers to raise his elimination count. There's like a gimp scene where he ends up, like, killing a bunch of people that are chained up, but, like, to make it look like there's a bigger body pile, he copy and paste still photos of the same bodies, like, the same people, to make it look like a big, giant pile, and I'm like, man, talk about artificially inflating your diesel spot, you know? Like, that's what you really do.
You thought there were these three guys here, but there's actually 12 guys here.
I'm imagining, like, Diesel standing in the ring surrounded by, like, a fucking moat of, like, the same three guys.
And they just keep running back to get tossed out again. Yeah. Fantastic. All right, Denny. The all-important question, what is your Kritiker score?
Oh, God.
For Twisted Pair?
Let me look. This is not the type of thing I think about scoring a lot. I forgot about this.
It's an impossible movie to score. The IMDb is, like, I think the average is, like, 4.9, and it's, like, a spike of one-star reviews, and then a gigantic dip, and then a spike of 10-star reviews.
Yeah. So
people are divided.
I gave it an 8 out of 50, lovingly, of course. For those who know how low my floor is, anything that is coherent gets a 10. If you made a coherent movie from start to finish and I could tell what was happening, you get a 10. Most of Neil Breen's movies are hovering down at the 4s and 5s because this is one of the more coherent ones. Although he does not achieve complete coherence, there are segments of this movie that seem to string together. And it's also just like, you know, honestly, I've never felt like I got a good bad movie every time I fucking watched one of his, but I think it's like you said, I think Twisted Pair is probably top three. Obviously Fateful Findings is number one, but this one deserves a little more of a rating because it's, you know, not just him wandering around in the desert for 3 hours like at least three of these movies are.
Well, damn.
What about you?
Very fair. I gave this one a 10 out of 40.
Nice.
It's not... again, these are impossible to rate. Like, it's just... Do I judge the quality of the movie or judge, like, how good of a time I had watching the movie? And I gotta give it points. Like, I'm giving him points where I can find them. I just appreciate so much his, like, his boldness. It's honestly, like, for lack of a better word, inspiring. Like,
yes.
if you're, like, have it in your head to do a creative project of any type, do it and put it out there. Mm-hmm. This guy is just doing it and putting it out there. Whatever it is you want to do, whether that's writing a book, writing a screenplay, drawing something, coming out with a song, like, the quality of what you have in your head that you think you can do is better than the quality of what he's putting out with his movies, and he's still just doing it. So push yourself, put your thing out there. It is honestly inspiring. Release your art.
Yes.
Who knows how it's going to be received? You are not an insane person.
So something
you're probably fine.
I seriously have so much respect for someone showing me their art. Because I think to, like, show your art to someone is to essentially, like, let them read your soul's journal and pray that they don't laugh at it. And like you said, it is vulnerable and inspiring to continue to put work you believe in out there, no matter how good or how bad it is. I think that Neil Breen is happy when he's making movies, and I like to live in a world where people are happy. It makes me happy when he's making movies, too.
That's right. I think we are wrapped up here.
Yep.
I love what you said, but I missed a note, and I had to bring it up.
Please.
I'm very sorry. When you watch any of the scenes, especially the ones... Oh, I just love the scenes where he's on screen with himself. God, fantastic.
Brain screen.
But, like, when it's just a camera on him, and he's delivering a line, he will say the line, and then his face does something. And I call it him resetting his face back to one. You'll see, like, his jaw muscles kind of move. He kind of, like, moves his mouth and then,
I know what you're talking about.
Resets his head. It's the strangest thing. He'll just be like, this, like, you're, this must be stopped. And just, like, settles his head. Face goes back to neutral, and you see, like, his jaw muscles move a little bit. It's just, It's just the most distracting thing. It's very strange. I'm sorry. I had to call that out. I made that note, and it was... Once you notice it, you don't stop noticing it. It's very funny.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Oh, my God. Fantastic. Okay, Denny. That's the end.
That's the end of the rumble.
That's the end of the rumble. The only problem, though, is... Right before the match ended, I think a couple guys were starting to go over the ropes a little bit. Then the lights cut out. It's dark in there. I don't know who's left in the ring. I think there's only going to be one way we can find out. I think it's going to be up to the audience who remains standing. Who is the last director standing? Folks, be sure you vote in the poll.
Check out our Instagram, at MoviesForWhen.
Yeah. And we'll be posting a poll basically when this episode airs. You guys need to pick who the last director standing is. Who is the winner of the Movies for Win Director Royal Rumble?
Who are you voting
for? This is a blast.
I had a great time, dude.
I think me personally, I would want the Coen brothers to win.
Mm-hmm.
They're my favorites. They've made my favorite movie of all time. And they've made some of my other favorite movies of all times. Of all times. Multiple times. If Tarantino wins, I won't be upset. If Breen wins, I won't be surprised. And if Carpenter wins, I'll be like, hell yeah, brother. What a guy.
I really like the final four. They're all people that I would be very happy with winning. And I actually don't know how I'm going to vote yet, to be honest. I'll have to think about it. I can say I like to be careful not to overvalidate Quentin Tarantino. So I'm probably not going to vote for him, even though I love him.
Every time he's brought up, you make this very clear. So I think we're well established.
We need to keep him off BET, okay? I'm doing my part.
Boy, do we. Oh, man. All right. Okay, well, all that's out of the way.
Yeah, dude.
I guess the only other question would have been, like, you know, what was your favorite? Is there, with the Royal Rumble over, is there anyone that you would have wanted to keep? Like, is there anyone that got knocked out? You're like, shit, that's not fair. I'm missing Kurosawa more and more every day.
Let me see. I wrote down, like, everything that we did here. I was kind of upset that The Shining and Raiders of the Lost Ark went out so early. I don't think Raiders stood a lot of a chance against just so many other, like, heavy hitter movies. I would have liked to see The Shining do a little bit better. Other than that, I think we picked all great movies. I'm more like, I'm more thinking about, like, the next time we do this. And even Bevan said we should do, like, an actor Royal Rumble, you know, like, change it up a little bit. But yeah, I'm even like, you know, someone I really wish we got into the Rumble that we didn't, someone we just haven't covered a lot of, is Alfred Hitchcock. It just never felt like the right week for him when we were talking about who to do. But if we did this again, he'd be a big priority for me.
Yeah, yeah, I like that. And I think we were also tossing around the idea of Greta Gerwig being...
Yeah,
she just needs to do more movies, I think.
Love her. Love her.
Love her a lot.
What about you? Anybody that... any gripes with the Elimination Order? Anybody you wish we included?
I miss Bong Joon-ho. Like I said, Kurosawa, I think, is the biggest name getting tossed out, but he was first in and honestly lasted quite a good while. And like ultimately this whole thing got me watching more of his movies, which that's all that matters at the end of the day, you know. But yeah, Kubrick leaving is a shocker.
Sure.
It's just fucking hell. Did you guys see The Shining? Holy
shit. Yeah, seriously. I thought The Shining was gonna last longer. But also, like, seriously, we did 9 movies, and I'm pretty sure I gave at least 7 of them a perfect score. You know, like, so that's what we're working with here. But Greg, are we progressing into spooky season from here, my guy?
That was what I was gonna bring up next.
Let's fucking go.
Things are getting eerie. Pumpkins are getting carved. Orange lights are going out, and fake spiders are hanging in our house. Or real spiders. I don't know your living situation.
Both.
Hell yeah. Spooky season is upon us, folks. I think Denny posted, what, like a... one movie for every day for the month of October.
Yeah, my 31 days of Halloween.
Yeah, 31 days of Halloween. If you guys watch all 31 of those movies in October, please.
We'll have you on the podcast.
Join the show. Yeah,
you're going to be If you do show. All 31 days of Halloween, we will do like a podcast episode just on you. Like, we will interview you about it. I want someone to take the gauntlet.
Yeah, and if you get started late, doesn't matter to us. Just
as long as you do them all.
Yeah, there you go.
But this year,
if you do them out of order, we're going to fucking kill you.
No, that order is something I thought about a lot, and I need you people to trust me on the order, okay?
Who do you mean, you people?
You know, the people that are watching the movies, of course.
Mm, the audience. Cinephiles,
yeah, the audience. Mm. But did we decide on are we locked on our theme for spooky season?
I had a vision for spooky season, but
what's your vision?
We revisit old themes.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
We'll decide on the first theme to cover. We'll post it on socials, folks. We'll let you know what the movie is going to be for next week. But until Denny, the catchphrase will be right here. Watch ET, folks.
Ladies and gentlemen, for Greg, I never had a beard, Johnson. I'm Denny. Basically have always had a beard, Taylor, and this has been Movies for When. We already told you when, but we know what we didn't tell you. What's my Cade again? Cade, not Cage, because he's having a tortured crossing. I'm a Cade. See my beard?
I'm programmable virtual reality. See my badge?
I'm allowed to be on this community college campus. See my student badge?
Stay.